Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the How's My Hand Path podcast. This week on the show, we have Mr. Josh Gregory. For those of you who don't know, Josh is a two-time NCAA National Championship winner with Augusta State. He currently coaches Patrick Reed on the PGA Tour and takes a very different approach to his instruction than what you've seen from some of the other coaches in the past. Not so mechanical, a lot of feel-based work, a lot of philosophy involved. It's a really cool, interesting conversation we had, and we hope you guys enjoy it. So here's the interview. Let's hop right into your story, man. I would love to hear, first of all, were you a good golfer growing up? Did you play when you were a kid?
Yeah, I did. I started playing with my dad was a really good player. He was a scratch, probably, you know, was in the plus one or two at his best. He was a great player. So I started swinging with him ever since I was about 2 years old. And I grew up at a really cool place in Memphis, Tennessee called Windyke Country Club, which was, we had two courses as well as an 18-hole par three course. So I was very fortunate. So I grew up on a par three course playing all the time. And so I started swinging it, you know, pretty seriously around four or five, and started competing around eight or nine, and played all throughout high school. I played my college golf at SMU in Dallas, Texas. My college coach was Hank Haney. And then I went on to play professional.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, he coached at SMU for 5 years. So I was there for four of his five.
How long ago was this?
Gosh, you're dating me here. I was 93 to 97. Okay. I'm 44. So
this is the pre-Tiger days.
Just right before Tiger, he was Mark O'Meara was there all the time practicing, and got to spend a lot of time around him, which was pretty special. But
nice.
But anyway, then went on to play professionally for 2 years, and realized that wasn't really for me. I played when I came up into Canadian Tour School. I played the Hooters Tour, played every bunch of mini tours, and I didn't realize that the Hooters Tour played very often on the weekends. So that was I didn't make many cuts. I was just average at best, and was always the guy that was either making the cut by one or missing the cut by one or two. I was just never had the belief, never had the things that you need to be a very successful professional golfer. You got to believe you're twice as good as you really are, and that's what I try to do as a coach, is get my players to believe that. And unfortunately, I believed I was about half as good as I was. That's a bad combo.
So let's start this off by saying that you're in the top 0.1% of coaches in terms of your playing ability, which already is a feat in itself. Because most coaches, as far as my knowledge goes, cannot break 75. I don't think pretty regularly.
Well, I still love the game. I haven't competed in a while. I was a college coach for 14 years after I played professionally, and then. I was an assistant coach at NC State for 2 years, and then 9 years at Augusta State, where we were fortunate enough to win back-to-back national championships in 2010, 2011, where I had Patrick Reed and Henrik Norlander, two guys who I still coach on the PGA Tour now, on my team, and then went to SMU for 3 years and my alma mater, and helped rebuild the program there, and then decided to go out on my own about 5 years ago. But I don't play and compete much anymore. I still love to hit balls. I still love to try to get better and figure things out. It makes me a better coach by trial and error, and especially with a lot of what I do, which is performance-based and short game-based. And I think you have to be able – I think you have – what made me a great college coach was that I could play and I could beat my players most of the time until I got really good players. But
that's a good problem to have.
That's a good problem to have, yeah. But I think it's important to be able to do it a little bit on your own, and at least be able to swing the golf club, to be able to, especially with the short game, to be able to hit shots, to be able to read lines, to be able to understand things. I think that's it's important for a player. If I'm a tour player and I can see that, hey, coach can do it, then I'm probably going to listen a little bit more. Right. And that's just kind of my bias. I think it used to really bother me as a college coach during my time, when there was college coaches who had better teams than me, but their coaches didn't play, or they weren't good players or whatever. And that used to really bother me, because I was like, this is a joke. How can they be beating our teams? And then as yeah. I became more mature and realized that, hey, it's not all about that. And it really opened my eyes to understanding the importance of motivation, organization, you know, how to get the best out of players. And it's not just about how to swing the golf club, how to chip, how to putt, all those things. There's a lot more into coaching, as you well know.
For sure. I mean, first of all, what year did you stop attempting the mini tours?
I played from, let's see, 98 to 2000. It was just under 2 years. And like I say, I didn't have a ton of success. I mean, I just was always a guy that was trying to perfect his golf swing. I had a very good golf swing to begin with. And I kept searching for perfection and kept overanalyzing. This was the days back of the camcorder days, and I would charge my phone all day while I played. And by the time I got to about the 16th hole, after I'd exhausted about 42 swing thoughts, I couldn't wait to get to the range to try to figure out and plug the camera in and figure it out. And
damn, dude,
then I was
you were a mechanical guy.
I was, but I'm not. It's weird. I coached the opposite of the way I tried to play. And it's odd because I'd never had a golf lesson until I went to college. Never took one. And Hank Caney was my coach, and I learned a ton about the golf swing, a ton about how to play the golf game. And I just went about it the wrong way when I played on my own, and tried to perfect something that can't be perfected, and something that was already good enough. And I kind of lost my ability to play the game and understand it. And so I spent many a night in a hotel room with the camcorder hooked up, looking at my swing position, and would go out there the next day with these high hopes of going to flush it and stripe it. And then usually about hole three or four, I realized those thoughts weren't working. So I coached the opposite of the way I played. I'm very feel based. I'm very how to hit shots to fix technique, as opposed to technique to hit shots. Mm-hmm. Obviously you got to combine a little bit of both.
Sure.
But I think it's truly helped me. My struggles as a player it truly helped me as a coach, and especially at the highest level, and helping tour players, because these guys are so darn good. You know, they sometimes just don't know what makes them tick. We give them so much credit for knowing everything, and obviously they know a lot, but honestly, they're just that darn good. And it's my job to help them know what makes them tick and help keep them on the right path, and not let them reinvent the wheel like I tried to reinvent the wheel every single day. And I didn't really figure it out until I started playing. I got my amateur status back and played mid-amateur golf from about 2007 to 2012. I competed a ton and did some good things. Made it to several U.S. mid-ams, several pub links of the USAM. Lost the playoff to go to the Open. Did a lot of nice things as a player, and I finally kind of got out of my own way and figured out some things that started playing the game again. And hadn't competed much or hadn't really done anything since then much. I've too busy working, as you well know. It's very hard to after a long day to really want to go out and try to get on the golf course and play. I spend most of my time trying to make other people better, and that's just good enough for me.
There's two things, first of all, that I love about that answer. First of all, the fact that you said a lot of the swing changes you make are intent based that lead to a mechanical change, which I think is great, because you know, a lot of people, obviously, and I fall in that trap every now and again, where you can get really mechanical with things and, like, you know, start talking biomechanics. But oftentimes you can get players to achieve a ball flight adjustment or a mechanical adjustment by an intent through feel or through a comment you're making, like saying, you know, you're hooking the ball, try to fade it. All of a sudden the player gets a little less inside out or whatever. I'm sure you use a lot of those kinds of generic terms when you're teaching.
100%. Fortunately, I'm not as smart as you. I don't know a lot of the biomechanics, so that's a blessing and a curse, I guess. And it's something that I strive to get better at as a coach, because I want to keep getting better and keep making my players better. And so it's something that I'm continuing to improve and continuing to learn. But that's not my passion. My passion is how to score the ball and how to get the ball in the hole. And so yeah, you're 100% correct. I mean, it baffles me when you see a player who's, let's say, he's swinging four or five end out, and you're trying to get the path down to one or two. You know, you've got to learn to swing it three to four out to end. You got to go polar opposite to find the happy beat. And it baffles me how sometimes good players can't do that. I can set up on the range and I can make a swing that's 10 degrees left or 10 degrees right. And that's how you can't be afraid to overdo things. And so that's where, you know, a lot of my ball strike, you know, with the you know, eight guys that help on the tour and the four web guys and the other college and junior players. I mean, you know, most of my stuff is very simple. It's very simple. It's learning to understand what causes ball flight, what causes the ball to curve certain ways. And you know, half the guys I teach full swing with, and the other guys, it's just all short game and practice. So it's a little bit of both, but you know, it can be very simple, setting an alignment rod in front of you and learning to hit draws and fades around it. And a lot of times, you know, you can find your golf swing by simply learning to curve the golf ball and find the center of the face. And next thing you know, you start striping it, as opposed to thinking about a certain position to produce a certain shot. And especially guys at that level, I mean, they, you know, to take a 20 handicapper and have them stand behind a tree and tell them to hit a 20-yard hook around it, they may not be able to do that. But guys of the highest level, if they're swinging 4 or 5 degrees out there and they're hitting big pull fades, then I take them and behind a tree and I tell them to hook it around that tree without changing their alignment too much, I can promise you they'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're that good, but sometimes they need it to be simplified that much in order to figure it out, as opposed to saying, all right, we got a shallow shaft, we got to do this. All that's well and good, and all that is very, very important. Don't get me wrong. But sometimes we just got to break it down the simple way and say, all right, start it out and over that water hazard, you know, down the right side of the fairway and hook it back to the fairway. Start it over the houses to the left and cut it back in the fairway. So you combine some feels with some trust drills to get guys to really be able to perform, hopefully, under the gun. And that's my number one job, is try to make practice and preparation as structured and as hard as it possibly can be. So therefore, it's a little bit easier under the gun.
It's funny because I think that, you know, the failures you had as a player, you know, I think a lot of that kind of led to the coaching that you deliver, because obviously you were somebody who clearly was too obsessive based on my understanding of the positions and the mechanics. And obviously you saw the route that can take both mentally and physically for a player's golf game. So I would imagine that a lot of that had to do with how you start coaching now, which clearly you've proved great success with.
Thank you. Yes, yeah, so no doubt it has. My background is paved the way. I always say, do as I say and not as I do. I still obsess when I work on my own game about positions and wanting to
seen your swing on social media. It's pretty fucking good.
Well, unfortunately, there's a net in front of me. I can't promise you it's going to look that good out on the golf course. But no, it's an obsession of positions, of how it looks over functionality. And at the end of the day, when you're standing on the 18th hole at TPC Sawgrass and you've got to try to find a way to get that ball in the fairway, whether you hit a 20-yard cut that starts out over the water or you hit a slinging hook that starts over the pavilion on the right, you've got to find a way and you got to know what works for you. And so, you know, it's something that when I went out, you know, my ability to relate to players, the relationships I've had, the passion I've had, the understanding what makes certain guys tick, it's what made me work, what made me successful as a college coach. And that I never coach anybody the same. Even as a college coach, we were never a team. We were a group of individuals that added up to a team score at the end of the day. And college golf is not a team sport. And so I think that really helped me in my development of how to coach these guys out on tour now, is that everybody's different. Everybody's motivated differently. Some guys need a kick in the ass. Some guys need a pat on the back. Some guys love to play. Some guys love to practice. How do we try to intermingle all these things and figure it out to get the best out of each person? And it's I'm so lucky to get to do what I get to do on a daily basis. And it's something that, you know, when I got out of college coaching and went out on my own, I tried to figure out, all right, what if I could have done things differently, what would I have done? Let's make this real simple. What would I have done differently? I don't know if I was ever good enough to play at the highest level, but I know I was better than I ever played. And I simply thought about it. It's golf. We make this very difficult. We make it very hard. But it's real simple. There's four physical areas of the game, and anybody that's probably any player that I've ever asked or ever worked with or ever interviewed me or whatever to see if they wanted to work, I asked them the same question. There's four physical areas of the game. There's full swing, there's distance wedging, there's short game, which is chipping, pitching, bunker, and there's putting. How many times have you spent equal time in all four areas of the game in one day? And unless you're lying, nobody has. I never have. Nobody has. But why not? Now, I understand stats will show that there's certain part of the game that are more important, but why would we want to have a weakness? So therefore, I mean, very rarely in the game of golf are all four of those areas going to click in one day. If they do, that's when the professionals shoot 63. Now, my goal is that we can get all areas solid enough that if one or two of those are off, we still can find a way to shoot three or four under par. On a really bad day, we still can find a way for those guys to shoot even par. And that's kind of the premise. And when within those, my flaw, probably most everybody out there flaws, we spend too much time in technique. There's three ways to practice. You got your technical work, you got your random work, and you got your competitive work. I think we all get wrapped up in too much technique and wanting to, and is that important? Yes. And are there times of the year, are there times when you're making changes that technique needs to be more than those others? Of course there is. But we still can't ever neglect those other areas. And that's where I see, you know, how many times have you gone to the range, or you've seen students go to the range, or I know I've gone to the range, and I fit the same club 300 times, and I've never changed my target.
Like block practice too much?
Block practice, and that's great. Block practice is wonderful. You have to do that when you're changing technique. You have to, but you still have to get a little feedback by switching up targets, switching up clubs, switching up angles, switching up some things that can at least give you a little bit of feedback, especially in the short game area. Ball striking, I think, is more block oriented. But having said that, you never have the same lie. You don't ever have the same wind. You're not always hitting your sock 7-iron 175. There's times when you're hitting it 155. There's times when you're hitting it 195. So I think you have to be able to practice those things. So therefore, at least when you get out on the golf course, you say, hey, I've been there and done that. So it's a real kind of dumbed down, simple formula that I've come up with and given my guys practice plans with, and you know, when I work with them, especially when it's at home, when we have more time, when there's 3 or 4 hour sessions, I mean, it's literally like a player showing up for basketball practice, and the coach runs them through practice, and they swing the club, and that's kind of what I do. I provide them a plan, provide them obviously some technical feedback and some things to work on, and monitor that. But it's mainly running through them a practice that can really prepare them, hopefully, to be able to play out on tour. And you know, I got some. I was very fortunate early on when I first went out on my own. I coached Patrick Reed in college, and he kind of took a chance on me and. 2015, I'm sorry. And he had gone 18 straight events without finishing in the top 10. And he was really upset, disappointed, frustrated, whatever. And he called and said, hey, coach, can you come to the playoffs and watch me in Boston and see if we can figure this out? So we spent a few days together going through some of my ideas and beliefs of how to practice and how to perform. And fortunately, he goes out and finishes fourth that week. And I think, boy, I'm the greatest coach ever. This is easy. How are these other guys screwing this up? This is cake. But that was the furthest thing from the truth. When you deal with a player that's that good, sometimes just a little bit of change can make all the world a difference. But what I learned from that is we go to the next tournament on Monday, and we're sitting there at Chicago. Where were we in Chicago? Not Conway. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We were in Chicago at the second leg of the playoffs, and we show up on a Monday, and I looked at him and says, what do you want to do today, bud? And he simply looked me dead in the eye, and I won't use the word that he said, but he looked at me and said, I didn't hire you to ask me that question. I hired you to show me the way I swing the club.
Mm-hmm. So he wanted you to come there with a game plan as opposed to trying to let him organize it and control it?
Exactly, which was a beautiful comment. I mean, it scared me a little bit because I'm like, wait a sec, this guy's one of the best in the world. I know I can coach junior players. I know I can coach college guys. You know, can I truly help the best in the world, try to do this? But it defined my role is what is needed, that these guys, for the most part, know how to swing the club. Do they need maintenance? Do they need it to get better? Of course they do. Does their putting stroke need to get better? Does their chipping technique need to get better? Does their distance wedging need to get better? Of course, all of this has to get better. But for the most part, they need to be shown the way. They've always had some form of coach, some form of, in any sport they played, and even in golf, they've had somebody, whether it was at the junior level, whether it was at the collegiate level, kind of holding their hand and showing them what to do or providing some form of structure in their life. And it's very easy when you get out on your own to fall into the trap of working hard, but not effectively. And there's a big difference there. A lot of guys put in the hours, 8, 10 hours a day. But they don't work effectively. Working effectively is a big difference. That is, how do we get the most out of each area of the game? Spend that equal time in each of those areas. And then we have to be willing to let it go, and we have to go home. Otherwise, it becomes counterproductive. You just start spinning the wheels. Yes. Are there times you've got to dig it out of the dirt? Of course you do. But for the most part, you got to spend those time in all those areas, and that's how you get better. But it was a really cool thing that it defined my role of what I need to do. I need to be a coach. These guys need coaches. And it's really been a really cool experience how Patrick's led to John Peterson, and John Peterson led to Kelly Kraft, and on and on and on and on. And now I'm so thankful to work with the amount of players that I do. But these guys are really good, and I'm learning just as much from them as they're learning from me. But it's amazing to me how many of these guys truly need a plan. They truly need somebody to hold them accountable. I had a cool quote last year, a couple years ago, one of my players finished second, and they were asking about what I do for them, and he simply said, "Coach makes me do the things I don't want to do, but I know they work, and I need them to be done." That's a pretty cool compliment, because that's, you know, it's not fun. It's not fun sometimes when they walk off the course and they shoot two over par, and they're frustrated at you, and they're mad because, you know, they didn't putt well, they didn't do well, and they don't think the drills that they're doing are working, or whatever the heck the case may be. And I have to stand strong and look them in the eye and say, "Hey, man, these drills have been working for a long time. This is just one bad day. We're going to stay the course. We're not going to reinvent the wheel. You have to trust in what I'm saying, and that I'm not going to make up something just to change something just so we can look for a Band-Aid."
Right.
And that's
there's going to be no searching today, pretty much.
Yeah, it's a I got a ton of stories, and as you can tell, I like to talk a lot. But one of my favorite stories that it will kind of that shows the best example of that. So Adam Long is somebody I've worked with for 2 years on the web, and then he got his card last year, was fortunate enough to win, and then he's off to a great start this year.
I think he's around 30 or so. You're gonna laugh, but I just interviewed Julian a couple days ago.
Oh my God, Jules is the best. Yeah. I am so thankful that's worked out. It's been a great relationship, and Jules has helped him more than anything. And he is such a good dude.
He's a Montreal boy like me. That's why we had the connection.
Yeah, that's awesome. Jules is the best. But Adam and I kind of, it was interesting. You know, it goes back to the coaching player dynamic of, and you know, you've got guys that you helped on the PGA Tour, you got guys that have helped on the Corn Ferry, and mm-hmm. and for the most part, you see your Corn Ferry guys at home, and occasionally you get to see them on the road, but not that much. It's just not feasible for that to really happen that often. Right. And so Adam would come to Dallas, and we would make our changes. We would do all our work in our off weeks, and I would see him maybe twice a year at that time, the web, now Corn Ferry. And so going out to see him, there wasn't really much to be done. You just watch and you observe and you learn and you figure out how to try to help him get better. But last year on the PGA Tour as a rookie, you know, I see him 30 weeks a year. I travel to about 30 events a year. And so I see him every week. So we made, you know, even after he won, he still, you know, had a hard time believing that, "Hey man, do I really belong out here? Am I good enough to be out here?" All those kind of things. And we actually, I overcoached him. It was something that, the intentions were great. But I made a mistake, and it was a great learning lesson for both of us, that we were talking too much. We were analyzing too much. We were trying to figure it out, and that's not who he is, and that's not who I am. But because we were spending all this time together now, we felt like we had to be doing something.
So that actually
changed. So we made a rule.
So that changed when he got on tour?
Yeah, it changed. Yeah, because I didn't see him that much before. Therefore, we just stuck to the basics. We stuck to the plan. We stuck to doing the same things over and over and over again for a couple of years. And it finally helped him graduate to the PGA Tour. And last year, you know, we just tried too hard. We tried too hard to be perfect. We tried too hard to you know, when he would look at me and say, "What do you see in my golf swing?" I would see something, and we would try to kind of work on that. And it wasn't, you know, picking it apart too much, but it was too much for him. That's not the kind of guy he is. Mm-hmm. So we literally sat down at the end of the year, and we wrote, he wrote down his goals. I wrote down his goals for him. And it was really a cool thing as a coach. And I know it's going to make me a better coach, not only for him, but for others. But we simply wrote down one thing in his golf swing, one thing in his short game, in wedging, and one thing in his putting stroke that we were going to focus on.
You broke down the four major areas in like one objective on each one, basically.
One objective, one technical thought in each area. And so we're going to do this for the entire year until proven otherwise, until we think there's something else that needs to be done. And we really simplified it. And we've talked way less this year. We've spent just as much time around each other, but it's just reinforcing the same things. And we were a perfect example of this. We were at Sea Island earlier this year. He just finished second in Mexico the week before, lost by one to Brendan Todd. And he had he finished second that week in strokes gained, tee to green, hit it great, drove it great, did everything wonderful. We get to Sea Island. It's windy. It's not that warm. He gets it bad the first day. Shoots 73. Keeps hitting it left. Which is his mistake. Mm-hmm. He gets to the range afterwards and goes, "What do you see, coach?" And I didn't say a word. Finally, he kept going, "What do you see?" And then finally, he used another word that I won't use, but he said, "What do you see?" And at this time, the tone is getting pretty aggressive. And I finally said, "Bud, I see the same thing I've seen for 3 years, 3.5 years. There's like, nothing that needs to be changed."
Don't expect a new answer because I'm not going to come up with something bullshit for you.
I'm not going to come up with. But he looked at me and he didn't like it. But I said, "What do we do when we overhook it? What's your flaw?" He answered me with what his flaw was. I said, "What do we do to fix it? Start some down the left side, learn to overcut it. Let's neutralize the path." Very simple. But it was a great lesson for both of us that, hey, we were able to stick to our plan, goes out the weekend, play the next 3 days, plays wonderful, finishes about 20th, 23rd, somewhere in that ballpark. But it was a step in the right direction for me as a coach, understanding that I wasn't going to give him a lesson. He wanted a golf lesson at that time. But he didn't need a golf lesson. We have to understand when golf lessons are needed, but we also have to understand, probably more importantly, when we got to stick to the same stuff, and it's more mental than it is physical at that point. And let's don't reinvent the wheel.
It's kind of funny because I just had a mini tour guy message me this morning, literally, and he goes, "Dude, I'm hitting hooks," and this guy like has hit hooks for the last year and a half. And then he goes, "Dude, I'm hitting hooks. Is there anything you see?" And he sends me a video, and I kind of had a very similar explanation like you had. I'm like, "What happened the last time you hit hooks?" "Okay, I did this with the club, this and that happened with my body, and it created this ball flight." I'm like, "Okay, now look at the video." And the video was like directly representative of the things we've seen over and over again. So then I'm like, "But if you're looking at the video and it looks identical to the last time you sent in a video that had the same miss, don't you think the solution for that problem is the exact same solution?"
It's the truth, but you know, as us as players, and we sometimes want a quick fix, and it's our job as coaches not to give the quick fix. I mean, are there band-aids that can be given to make it better? Whether it's a slight change of ball position, maybe slight change of alignment, maybe something here or there that's just but it doesn't ever deviate from the overall master plan of what we're trying to do in any phase of the game. And it's hard because it's as I told Adam that day, and he said, "Well, because his mistake is he tilts back, his head drops back, the path gets too much from the end, hand path goes out to the right, flips the face over, hits flip hooks."
Big hooks.
And I said, "Bud, you're going to hang back, your head's going to fall back, you're going to tilt back the rest of your life." Yeah, it's never going to be fixed.
You know what? Jeff Smith had the exact same answer with something about Aaron Wise, which was that Aaron Wise has a little bit of a pull down to the shaft. He gets a little steep and jumpy at the bottom. Jeff kind of told him a similar response, which was like, you know, your tendencies are the foundation of those tendencies are likely going to stay there forever. It's just about managing them to the best of our abilities.
Yeah. It's your DNA. And I've heard, some guys talk about that. I think Paul Ezing, most notably, and we've Phil Blackmar as well, talked about the golfer's DNA, and it's who you are. Your golf swing is not going to. I mean, there's only been several players: Nick Faldo, Tiger Woods. Not many that have made major overhauls of their golf swing, and at a certain point, and been successful with it. So it's who you are. But it's how are we going to manage it? How are we going to keep trying to get it better? But also understanding that that's who you are. Yeah, and it's a fine line, but it's cool. It's something that we get better as coaches every year, and we learn. I've been fortunate to work with some great players and Patrick Reed, and now working with Charles Howell and learning. I'm going to learn way more from him than he's probably ever going to learn from me. And he's going to make all my players make me better coaches. And this is definitely something that has been a cool experience, and definitely learned that as much as Butch Harmon said it best one time, I was around him and we were discussing things, and he says, "Josh, you got to know when to shut up, and you got to know when to say something."
Yeah.
And it's brilliant.
When you talk and what you're saying is equally as important as the actual information you're giving them.
1,000%. And it's like you, I don't know you that well, but I know for darn sure you care because I see you always responding to your players. I know how much you care. I tell people this all the time. I might be outknowledged, but I'm going to darn sure try to never be out cared. Yeah. And sometimes the care too much, you know, it's a great quality to have, but it can sometimes hurt you when you try too hard. And I've even talked with Dr. Brett McCabe, is a good friend of mine, about this as well. About, you know, the tour player and the mindset of how to deal with those first 30 to 45 minutes after the round's over, because unless they shot 63, they really don't want to listen to anything you have to say. They want to fix things, but they really don't want to fix things. And there's nothing you can really say at that moment that's going to make it better. And you know, I'm guilty of caring too much, want to fix it, wanting to make it better. But sometimes I'm better off just shutting up and stepping away, and then let's speak when the time's right.
So here's a follow up to that. Then I would love to know, like, over the course of your coaching career, obviously you've coached all these great players. I mean, Patrick Reed was on to win the Masters, which is amazing for you. What's been the biggest change or shift in your coaching style over the last, let's say, 10 or 15 years?
Great question, man. You're asking hard questions. I think it's more. I went into the mindset when I was a college coach. I was a college coach for 14 years and then been out on my own for 5. So I guess I would say that's 19 years.
Oh, Dory, I was doing some research, dude. 2-time NCAA champ, coach of the year. I mean, you had a great coaching career in college.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was pretty cool to do it at a place at Augusta State where we didn't have much. We're the underdogs, and it was pretty awesome to bring a national championship to that town and that university. But I had great players, as we both know. Great players make you look a lot smarter than you are.
Oh, 100%.
But we're only as good as they are, and we've unfortunately or fortunately chosen a lifestyle where our livelihood depends on their performance.
Well, isn't it so funny how I feel like we get overcredited for their successes and undercredited?
Oh gosh.
Or vice versa. Wait. Let's say, like, when a player wins a tournament, we look like gods, and when a player struggles and misses a few cuts, we look like the worst coaches on the planet.
The worst. And I'm the worst, my own worst critic. I remember driving back from San Antonio, I think 2 years ago, and I had 5 players there, and they all 5 missed a cut, and I literally thought I was the worst coach in the world. And then 2 weeks later, Patrick Reed wins Masters, and then I had a couple other guys, another guy win, and it's just you just never know. It's just crazy. We're never as good as people say we are, but we're never as bad as people say we are either.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I would say the thing that's changed the most for me, and it's something that I knew, but I didn't have the confidence. I didn't have the maturity to probably to enforce it or really buy into it early on in my college career. And then as time kept going on, I didn't like what I was seeing. I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with college golf and how it's done, but it's a five guys play and they count the low 4 scores. And so you're always kind of bouncing around as a coach, whether you're standing on par 3s or standing on par 5s or walking around trying to talk to everybody. And I realized this is just a cluster. This is the cluster. This is not what golf's about. I mean, you know, my emotions, my anxiety, my when I'm high, I'm high. When I'm low, I'm low. And I wear my emotions on my sleeve. And so therefore, when I'm bouncing forth all over the place, going to each player, they can sense that. And I'm thinking I'm actually doing more harm than I am good. So let's just go about this a different way. And I was fortunate enough to spend a lot of time trying to pick his brain, Coach Holder, Mike Holder at Oklahoma State, who's probably the greatest golf coach of all time and won, you know, however many national championships. And he always walked with one player. And I kind of just said, hey, I'm going to follow that mold. And it was better for our teams because I was learning more about one player's game. I could actually help that one person as opposed to bouncing around trying to. And it was also good for me. It was good for my emotional stability. That, hey, I'm going to be fully engaged with this one guy's round of golf, and I'm going to try to save him 1 or 2 shots that will help our team score. So that carried over into my practice beliefs as a coach in college. I never had team practice. We had team qualifying, of course, and workouts. But as far as practice, I mean, they knew I was going to be at the facility pretty much all day. So I'll see you there. We had individual lessons. We had individual time. You know, you schedule time, or I'm just going to be there, and we're going to work. And so, my simple goal was, if I get the best out of each individual, my team will take care of itself. And so, I think that's where it's carried over into my, you know, coaching theories now is that, you know, I only work with maybe, I'm very fortunate, I only work with maybe 18 or 20 players. And I coach each one of them differently. Every one of them has a practice plan, but every one of them's practice plan is a little bit different. We do different drills. A lot of my games, a lot of my drills may be similar, but they're still catered to each individual and trying to figure out the best out of each individual. There is no blanket plan. There's no blanket statement. There's no blanket model that I believe in. You know, I've kind of been known or getting known as the guy that's trying to fix a lot of the guys' short games out on tour, some of the guys that have really struggled around the greens. And so I've even adapted a lot of my theories there. I'm a big believer, and you know, I was a big believer, 100% believer at first, of teaching a very shallow on plane drawing chip a la Patrick Reed, who draws a chip, kind of hinges and unhinges, sweeps it, is maybe the best chipper in the world. Well, that doesn't work for everybody. And I started working with a few guys that cut the golf ball. Sam Ryder comes to example, and he's a cutter of the golf ball. He's a chest cutter. And that just didn't work for him. And I had to learn that, all right, how do we figure out how can we be just as shallow through impact? How can we get just the same amount of consistency of the strike without feeling very draw based? And so we learned to go more of a Jason Day, more of a U shape, more of a wide to wide arc versus more of a hinge to unhinge, more of a V shape. So it's something that you're constantly evolving as a coach. And I'm learning that there's not one single way to swing a golf club. There's not one single way to chip. There's not one single way to putt. Now, do we have foundations that we believe in? Of course we do. I have certain foundations that I believe in putting in the golf swing, certain things. But again, there's nothing that's an absolute certainty in any of these. And you know this better than I do, because you understand the biomechanics better than I do.
I mean, at the end of the day, look, there's two guys who are built completely differently with their bodies and have completely different full swings. Why should they both be chipping the same way? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And not everybody wants to learn that way. And you have to learn, you know, it's also, you have to, you know, people say, well, what do you believe in chipping? What do you believe in bunker play? And you know, chipping, bunker play, anything around the greens is all lie dependent. It all depends on the surface you're chipping off of. It all depends on the firmness, softness of the bunkers. I mean, a perfect example this year at the Honda this year, I had five guys playing, and I wouldn't say had to rebuild bunker games, but essentially had to change everything that we had been working on in our bunker games because they were so firm. They were hard as a rock, and unless you got
uncommon for Florida, or is that usually the case every time you go there?
It was uncommon there. It was really weird this year how firm they were. So I wasn't really expecting that. But usually you expect that when you go to Phoenix, when you go to Vegas, you can get more of the dry bunkers, desert areas. Exactly. When you've got to get the path more left, the heel under it, more steeper, weight more left, all those things to get the heel under the golf ball. We had to really kind of rebuild bunkers. Then we go to Bay Hill the next week, and they're soft as can be. Balls are plugging half the time. So therefore, the angle of attack is totally different under those lies than it is under the firm surfaces. So you have to be willing to adapt, and you have to be willing to understand. It's lie based chipping. It's lie based bunker play. There's no one method for every shot. Every shot's a little bit different.
So if there is a foundation, I guess the foundation lies with the idea that your lie should dictate the technique to some degree.
Yeah, that's honestly about as simple as we can do. And now, you know, I have certain found, you know, for basic chipping on normal lies, yes, there's foundations. There's foundations for when the turf is firmer. There's foundations for when you're into the grain. There's foundations for when it's wet. So it's almost like I had this is pretty good. One of my young guys, Doc Redman, who won the USAM a couple of years ago, and he's a young, really good player, very talented player, but really needed some help with his short game. And he kind of took it to an extreme, which is pretty cool. He kind of came up with all this information that I was giving him on each of the different lies. He kind of took it almost like a quarterback who writes it on his left wrist, you know, who has the playbook on his left wrist when he's looking at plays. Right. He literally started writing stuff in his yardage book each week that was going to say, hey, these are kind of my little checklist of certain lies. These are the lies I'm going to face this week. And so it's that would be the foundations, what I believe in around the greens and kind of putting would be the same way. There's certain foundations I believe in for guys who putt cross-handed. There's certain for arm lock. There's certain for conventional, but there's not a not a method.
So here's a couple last questions for you then. First of all, what would be, if there's a young person, let's say, who is coming up to you for advice right now, would you prioritize anything? Would you tell them anything specific? Like, look, this is kind of something that you should invest your time in that you know is going to give you a better chance of being successful?
Yes. I mean, I would go to my plan. I'm very biased toward it. I've seen it work. I've seen guys have success with it pretty fast. It's hard to stick with. It's very tedious, but it works. And it's simply, you got your four phases. You got your full swing. You've got your short game. You've got your putting. You've got your distance wedging. Let's try to spend equal time in each of those areas every day. And within those areas, we're going to practice technique. We're going to practice randomness, and we're going to practice some form of competition practice. And we're going to try to spend equal time in all those phases. When you do that, it's pretty much impossible not to get better each day.
Right.
Does that mean you're gonna perfect your driving in 2 weeks by doing that? No. But if you're getting a little bit better in each area, as dumb and as cliche as that may sound, I really feel like that plan works. It makes sure that I call it covering all the bases. If you cover all the bases, it's pretty hard not to get better. I can't tell you how many pros I've talked to or players I've talked to, and they say, I'll say, you know, what do you do in your morning routine before you go play? I go to the gym, I eat, I hit balls, but they don't have any clue how long they spend in each area. A lot of them sometimes don't even go to the chipping green. They may not even ever hit a bunker shot before they go to the first tee. That to me blows my mind. How could you not ever hit a bunker shot before you go to the first tee?
Right.
Now all of a sudden you get on the first hole.
You have no feel whatsoever in that bunker when you get in there.
Well, you're going to get to the first hole and you've short-sighted yourself and you go, wow, I haven't hit a bunker shot in 3 days.
Good luck.
So it's just little things. It's little things. It's all right. You know, at Bay Hill this year, you know, I'm a big preparation is huge for me. And Bay Hill this year, I knew everybody, not Bay Hill, I'm sorry, Honda. Everybody was going to be putting from off the green because the it was very, very bare around the greens. It was very grainy. There's really no reason to chip. You should be putting. Well, there was a little area off to the side of the putting green where you could actually practice your putts from off the fringe down a little valley, and you know, tried to make every one of my guys do that before they go out to the tee. And that, yes, that sounds childish. Yes, that sounds boring. But you're gonna have to do that 3 or 4 times in the round. So why are we not doing it in the morning?
I mean, at the end of the day, those 3 or 4 shots, if you get one of them more up and down than you otherwise would, that's a whole shot.
Yeah, we think it's all it is. It's you know, for a guy to go from 100th on the FedEx Cup to top 10 on the FedEx Cup,
it's one shot around.
It's one shot around. It's driving it. You know, one less missed fairway. It's one less penalty shot a week. Mm-hmm. It's one
so
less three putt.
From literally retaining your card to finishing top 10 every week is literally a shot or two at best.
And that's where I think this, you know, the plan, the sticking to it, the doing this stuff. I mean, the best players in the world, the best businessmen in the world, the best whatever, they write things down. They do the same things over and over again that work, and they stick to them, and they do it. How many times have we all seen Vijay Singh hit bunker shots, fairway bunker shots, for hours and hours and hours at a time? I can't tell you how many times I've walked the front nine of a golf course with a player and come back and he was still over there in the fairway bunker hitting bunker shots. Yes, it wasn't done to perfect his fairway bunker game. It was done for his balance or whatever he's working on in his golf swing.
Yeah.
But to take that to an extreme, how many times has the guy ever gone to work on his fairway bunker?
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure you do it as a coach for drills. I do it as a coach for drills for certain
sure.
things.
But I'm sure
whether
there's a lot of guys who don't.
Levels, whatever. But mm-hmm. to actually go work on it, how many times, I mean, and everybody says, well, I'm a bad fairway bunker player. When is the last time you've thrown 50 balls in there and figured it out?
Yeah, not very
but
often.
It's, I didn't do it. Trust me, I wish I had done these things. But I think that's the biggest advice I can give to whether it's a junior, whether it's, yeah, even if it's just an amateur golfer trying to get better. And obviously you can't hold the amateur golfer to the same standards as a tour player. They don't have the time. They don't have the resources, whatever it may be. But I gave a talk recently about, you know, if if you're an average 15, 20 handicapper that's got an hour to go practice, what do we all do? They all go to the driving range. They hit as many drivers as they possibly can because that's fun. But how about we spend 30 minutes on the range and 30 minutes around the short game area? I can promise your handicap will come down.
Yeah, I like that a lot. It's basically, from my understanding through this conversation, I mean, you spend a bunch of time on obviously the technical side, but there's an equal portion, if not more, on skill development and having consistency in what you are doing every day.
100%. I mean, I label myself as a performance coach. I'm not really sure what that means, but I label it as people ask, what do you do? And I say, I'm kind of a hybrid. I do a little bit of everything, whatever each player needs. I mean, some guys, the Kelly Crafts, the Adam Longs, the Michael Zellmans, those guys, I'm full swing, full everything, full practice, full short game. But with all my players that I work with, it's all of them include short game and practice. And that's where I've kind of found a little bit of a niche and something that I'm truly passionate about. And at the end of the day, that's where you're seeing the scores drop. I'm getting, I love teaching the full swing. It's something that I'm getting better and better at. But it's something that probably my style only works for a certain style of player, because it's not everybody. If you need to know every single position and what causes everything, then maybe I'm not your guy. But if you want feels, you want understanding the ball flight, you want little things, you want simplicity, then I've seen it work for guys as well.
I think everybody, it's very obvious that everyone learns differently. So obviously you've proven that your methods are going to work. And clearly that's not the case for everybody. But I mean, you have a guy who won the Masters, you've won national championships. I mean, to say that your methods don't work would also be kind of foolish.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think it's important for us as coaches to know what we're good at and know what we're not great at. And what you can't be, you had this talk with Charles Howell recently, you can't be good at everything. It's impossible, and I want to get better in each area. But I know my strengths, I know my weaknesses, and I'm not afraid to consult people, like yourself or Bennett Dawkins or Sean Foley or Chris Como or whoever it may be that truly understand the biomechanics of things, way better than I do. But I've been fortunate to be around people like that, and I've learned a lot, and it's made me a better instructor. As well as a better coach.
I mean, look, you said it before, right? There are players that are going to have things in their DNA of their golf swing that's not going to change, just like your student, Adam. I don't think it's much different from a coach. I think that coaches are always going to have their way of doing things, and we have our own DNA in how we communicate and how we talk and phrase things, and, we can play around with those things and get them better. But at the end of the day, you have to kind of have your own identity when you're coaching, and you can't do something differently and completely overhaul the way you coach just because someone else has proven that their method can be successful doesn't mean that yours can't,
100%. And I think that's why it's golf. And I think that's why we both love helping players get better. I mean, I have no trouble discussing anything with other coaches. Look, these players that I help, they aren't my property. I mean, I have players who work with other swing coaches. I don't care. I want to learn, and if that helps them become a better player, then I'm all for it. That's the number one goal, is making each one of my players, helping them become the best they can. And I know what I'm good at. That part has been proven. There's other things that I can continue to get better at, develop, and be a better coach and be more well-rounded. But I think where I've seen it work at the tour level is that there is a niche for that, and there is a need for this performance-based coaching, if that's what you want to call it, of how do I score better? How do I get the ball? How do I get the ball in the hole? Let's look at stats. Let's look at our practice. Let's see what can we do in these areas to make me better that doesn't always just involve a new position or a new fault. Can we find a way to simulate pressure a little bit better? It's never going to be the same. Never ever going to be the same, but it starts at home. You get a little bit of confidence at home practicing on your range or on your putting green. You get a little bit more when you go out to your local golf course and you do some things that work. Then you get a little bit more confidence in a practice round of a tournament. You get a little bit more on Thursday and Friday, but ultimately you get the most confidence on Sunday, whether it's payday or whether it's to win your club championship or whatever it may be. That ultimately you get your confidence through results. And that's you get a little bit of confidence through practice and preparation, but at the end of the day, hopefully those lead to results, which lead to the most confidence.
I love it, dude. I think you and I both would agree that we spend way more time worrying about other people's games than our own. So thankfully my results don't matter anymore at this point.
Yeah, you preach that. I'm just enjoy trying to get better. Maybe one day I'll play again. But I'm, as I tell a lot of people, I ruin a good day by going out to play golf.
Yeah, I would much rather, unfortunately, be spending my time doing other things and watching myself struggle and know why I'm struggling, but not have the will or interest to want to fix it.
That's a very, 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 very true. It's a great point. Well, man, I appreciate all you do. I love watching your stuff. It's impressive. I've learned a lot, and I love helping people get better, and happy to help in any way.
That was honestly great, Josh. I look forward to us hanging hopefully in the near future, as long as this thing kind of goes down at some point, and we'll get together. And if we do play around a round of golf, we'll not worry about a scorecard. Let's put it that way.
I can promise you that.
All right, buddy. Yeah, have a good one.
Well, I appreciate you having me. We'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure.
Okay. Thank you so much.
So that was the interview with Mr. Josh Gregory. We hope you guys enjoyed it. Just a quick little point here for everybody. We are going to be doing giveaways on our podcast soon. So we'll be doing things like secret words at different times in the podcast. And so pay attention, stay focused, because if you guys want to win some free stuff from us at our academy, we will be making it fun for you guys, all of you who have been listening in and enjoying the show. As always, stay safe, wash your hands. If you guys are in the backyard hitting in a net, focus on your strike. Don't worry so much about the ball flight because you can't see it. Find a qualified coach on the internet, because we are there to help you guys out, and start grinding.